Welcome to the River Mountain Church Preaching Library. It is our prayer and indeed our hope that this message might inspire your life. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the preaching of God's Word.
I was sitting there watching the news, and of course we had the bombing attack in Boston. And then right on the heels of that, we had the ricin poison being mailed to various different people in government. And then right on the heels of that, we had the big explosion down near Waco, people dying there. And then on the heels of that, we had epic floods in the Midwest. And so as I'm sitting here watching all of this, thinking about whether I should change my message and whether God would want to address something to the body of Christ, I'm listening to CNN, and they gave me the confirmation I needed. Because after they mentioned all the stuff that was happening that particular week, they said, these are plagues of biblical proportion. CNN said they are plagues of biblical proportion. How many people know that sometimes this stuff is like way beyond just normal affairs? It's way beyond normal affairs. The Bible tells us in this scripture, in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, if my people are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray, seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, I will forgive their sins and heal their land. But what the context is this. Solomon builds this wonderful temple. God says, I will be there in that temple for you. My power will be released in that temple. And then he says this. The second part of this. He says, when I shut up the heavens so that there's no more rain, or I command the locusts to devour the land, or I send pestilence among the people, if my people who are called by my name will then humble themselves. God says, when I begin to pour out judgment upon the earth, for whatever reason, pestilence, plagues, then that's the cue of my people, that's us, to do what? To begin to humble ourselves, to begin to pray, to begin to seek His face. It's like an alarm goes off. And as I was looking at this week, I said, is it very similar to the alarm that went off on 9/11, 2001? We saw the bombing. Then we saw anthrax. Then we saw something that most people have forgotten. The worst crash in aviation history in the last 20 years, which happened on November of 2001. And people remember this? 300 people died in a plane crash right outside of Brooklyn. One after another. Boom, 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 boom. What did we have this week? We had a bombing. We had poison being... I mean, these aren't even related. Not even the same people doing this stuff. Bombing, then poison. Then, an unrelated affair happening down in Texas, the fertilizer plant blowing up, many people dying. Is this just a coincidence? Or is this another 9/11 wake-up call for the church to say, hey, God's pouring something out, we better start praying? Do you think it's any coincidence that this young man right here became an American citizen on 9/11? 2011. Is that coincidental? A lot of times preachers talk about verses in the Bible that deal with 9/11, and they never mention this one. And to me, this is the verse that I think above all verses, and I'm not big into numerology. I'm not big into numbers meaning a lot of stuff. But 9/11 in Revelation to me is like so overwhelmingly clear. It speaks about an angel of the bottomless pit being released upon the earth. Abaddon is also known as the destroyer or the king of the locust. And one day he will be thrown into a bottomless pit. This Abaddon, this demonic beast, it's a spirit, it's an angel, actually a demonic angel. He is called the destroyer. He is the king of the locusts. So again, when God releases plagues, he's releasing this. Yes, he's allowing a demonic power to take control for a period of time. He's releasing him. And as you study this particular demon power, and if you go back into the book of Hebrews, you find out that God releases this power, this destroyer, to the degree that a nation destroys God's moral law. So when a nation says, we will begin to destroy God's law, God says, well, guess what? It's time for me to release the destroyer to destroy your laws, to destroy your life. You want to destroy? Let me release the destroyer. Do I believe this demonic power still exists? Absolutely. Look at what it says there, again in 2 Chronicles. When I command the locust to devour, remember he is the king of the locusts. When I send pestilence among the people, he is the one who brings destruction. He releases this demonic power, this plague, upon the people of the earth when they begin to turn away from the laws of God. So then we are called, when we begin to see this, we are called as the people of God to humble ourselves. It says, if my people who are called by my name, that's key. It doesn't say, if my leaders who are called by my name will humble themselves. It says, my people, you're his people, right? Do you know that when God begins to pour out his plague, he's looking to see if his people care? That's you. You know, one of the saddest things in church, and I was thinking about calling a prayer meeting for this coming week, but I decided not to. You know why? Because three people would show up. It's not that God can't work with three people. It's just that when a nation is in a crisis, God says, if my people who are called by my name, if they will come together, if they will all humble themselves, remember they're doing this in the tabernacle, and if they will seek my face, if they'll go after me. How many people know that the church is a sleeping giant that really hasn't awoken yet? I will show you churches that they can't get people to come out for a prayer meeting. They really can't. And we're no different. I guarantee you, if I call a prayer meeting, three or four people will show. I guarantee that. There have been a few times, though, in church history in which prayer meetings became the most important event. And there might be, you know, a couple hundred in a service, but when they had a prayer meeting, it would be a couple thousand. And believe me, that's when revival is happening. Did you notice in Boston that nothing really happened, until the people got involved, until the people of Boston got involved? And I believe it's the same principle in the church. Nothing's really going to happen in the way of revival until all the people get involved. You know what happened in Boston, right? They sent out those pictures of the bombing suspects, pixelated. Nobody could. Matter of fact, I looked at those pixelated things that the FBI sent out from all the surveillance video, and I had at least five people in mind that I thought could be those people. Were you like that? There was one who really looked like it, and I'm ashamed to say, but I started going on their Facebook page to see if I could find something. Pixelated things, that could be anybody. Let me go check. And believe me, they would have never caught him. But you know what they did? They said to the people, hey, this is the best we can do. What can you do? You know what began to happen? People begin to send in their pictures. And their pictures were really good. This one right here was sent in from a guy who had an iPhone. He only took one picture of the whole affair. And on the corner right, you see that right here? He posted this on Facebook. And he had no idea that the guy right there was right in his picture. And so somebody sees this picture on Facebook and say, you know what? I've been looking at those FBI shots, and this is the guy. I think you took a picture of him. And then they took this picture. And somebody saw this and said, you know what? I remember that. And they sent in this picture. And by the time everybody started sending in their pictures, we knew exactly what these guys looked like. And guess what happened then? They had no place to hide. And they panicked. And they said, we got to get out of town because everybody knows who we are. How'd this happen? The people. the people. You know what I found funny is I was watching the FBI SWAT teams and the Boston police and the state police and everybody, and you know, and they corner off a section and they spend hours upon hours following leads. And, you know what? They didn't know where he was. And so eventually, after a while, they give up. This is what happens. They give up. Right? I'm just trying to prove a point because I believe this is a principle. They give up. And they were searching in this big area right here. Every house, everything they could find. Well, out here, outside the perimeter, an area that they weren't searching, there was this guy's house. And they said, okay, all clear. Not all clear, but they said, you can go out. Just be vigilant. The guy walks out of his house, walks into his backyard, sees blood, sees a broken strap, realizes that there's probably somebody in there. He goes, calls 911. That's how they caught him. One old guy starts, you know, kind of wandering out of his house saying, oh, broken strap, look, blood on the thing. Well, I better call somebody. That's how they found him. SWAT teams, guys with big guns and everything, you know. Some old guy, oh, let's see what we got here going on here. Oh, blood. That's how they caught him. Never underestimate the power of all of us. The church is a sleeping giant that is trusting professionals, pastors, and others to be what they can't be or shouldn't be. And let me just tell you, we're never going to get it done until everybody becomes vigilant. Until everybody becomes serious. If my people will humble themselves. See, I'll tell you what. Again, God sends a plague. We recognize that there's a plague being sent by God. We come into the house. We gather together. And then we start to look at our lives. We don't point fingers. We don't say, oh, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. We look at our lives and we say, you know what? We're a mess. God begins to come in here. We're beating our chests. We're saying, have mercy on us. We're a bunch of sinners. It's all our fault. And God sees the humility. And He begins to open His eyes up to us. And He begins to move. We humble ourselves before Him. What does it say? We begin to press in and seek His face. What does it say? We begin to turn from our wickedness. You know, this word for prayer is a real interesting word. It's the word intercession. It means that we begin to pray, not for ourselves. We've humbled ourselves. We've asked God to search us. But we begin to pray for the lost world out there. We begin to pray for the world that God is pouring out His wrath upon. We begin to seek His face and say, God, please have mercy on them. Have mercy. Remember in the book of Ezekiel, God is just looking for one man who would just stand in the gap. Remember Abraham. God is about ready to destroy Lot. He's about ready to destroy Sodom. And Abraham says, listen, will you spare it for 50, 40? Eventually gets down and says, will you spare this city if I can just find 10 people? 10 people who are righteous. And God says, for the sake of 10, I'll spare it. Are we crying out to God the same way? Are we crying out to God and say, God, please be merciful on America? Look at the righteous people that are here. Spare us. Let me tell you what scares me about America right now. It's the same thing that scared Lot and Abraham about Sodom. Is that righteousness was really on the wane. That there was a spirit that had so taken over that place that they wanted nothing to do with God. As a matter of fact, and you did not see this, if you watch the Bible series on the History Channel, you did not see an accurate depiction of what happened in Sodom. You did not. Let me tell you exactly what the Bible says happened there, because there is a parallel. These two angels sent to this city are in Lot's home. And there's a pounding at the door. And the men of Sodom are saying, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out that we might know them. They don't mean that we might have coffee with them and get to know them better. The word know is a word that's used for having sexual relationships with these people. We know that Lot begged them. He said, please don't act wickedly. I have two daughters. They've not known a man. Same word. We know what he's talking about. You don't have to be a scholar to know what he's talking about. They have not known a man. Let me bring them out. And you can do to them as you please. Lot was so scared that he was willing to give his daughters to these wicked, vile men. Why? Because it would be better to sacrifice his daughters that he loved and cared about than it would be for these men to take what was sacred and defile it. I am not pointing my finger at the world outside these doors, but what I am saying is they're beginning to bang on the door of the church. And they're beginning to say, bring out what is sacred. Bring out your sacred things that we might defile them. They're banging on the door, and they will not be happy until we bring out our sacred things. I've heard over and over again. And by the way, if you ever want to do this, just go online and Google homosexuality, is it a sin? You will find probably 100 to 1 more passages saying it's not than it is. This is not an isolated issue. This is an issue that may bring America completely down. And it isn't because we're angry. It isn't. In the book of Jude, it says this. Just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the surrounding cities likewise indulged in sexual immorality and pursued unnatural desire, they serve as an example of undergoing eternal punishment. God eventually will release a destroyer upon America that will bring us down to our very roots, and then he will burn the root. We're told to intercede, not to judge. We're told to cry out, Lord, forgive them. They know not what they do. We're told, like Abraham, to say, listen, Lord, what if we have 1,000 righteous? What if we have, 100,000 righteous? Please don't destroy America. But let me just say this. Right now, we are safe. But let me tell you this in no uncertain terms. In 10 years, we probably won't be. They're banging on the doors of the church. They're saying, bring out what is sacred that we might defile it. And it is coming a time where the church will no longer be able to hold to its biblical position because it will be seen as evil. I said it again. The Bible and its position will be seen as evil. Isaiah talks about a day in which is coming in which good will be called evil and evil will be called good. It's coming. We need to turn from our wicked ways. It's interesting. We need to turn from our wicked ways. This word wicked doesn't necessarily imply total wickedness. It implies a quality of life that isn't up to standards. It implies a quality of life that isn't totally walking in obedience with God. It implies a subpar life. God's people are living a subpar Christian life. They're not willing to be obedient. But once we turn from our subpar, lackadaisical, apathetic, lukewarm life, it says then God will hear us. And He will forgive their sins. Notice this, I will forgive their sins and I will heal their land. It's like God forgives us all based upon the cry of the righteous. God desires to come and to heal our land. How does God heal? How does God heal His land? Do you know what it says over and over again in the Bible? Remember the first time God spoke this to me? He said, I want you to be under the tree of life because that's where the leaves of my spirit fall. And I thought to myself, the tree of life, I know about it in Genesis. I did not know about it in the book of Revelation. Here's what the book of Revelation says. It talks about a tree of life. And it says the leaves of the tree were healing for the nations. Or the leaves were for the healing of the nations. Leaves, biblically speaking, are the words of God. How does God heal? He sends His word and He heals a nation. He says, be healed, and a nation is healed. We're calling out, God, heal us. God, heal us. What we're calling out for is saying, God, send your word to us that we might be revived. If you need it a little bit clearer, it says it in Psalm 107. He sent out His word and He healed them. And He delivered them from what? Destruction. When God heals us, He delivers us from the demonic forces of destruction. But what happens when we no longer want His word? What happens when we no longer will receive His word? What happens when we no longer believe His word? What happens when His word is irrelevant to us? Can He heal us? No. Can He deliver us from destruction? No. If we cannot receive His word, we cannot be healed. This is the hard, cold fact. What if we reject the word? What if we no longer listen? Well, then we forfeit the healing, and then we are left with only judgment. How many people believe that there are no coincidences in God? Do you really think Boston was just a random happenstance? Has no rhyme or reason? You think 9/11 just happened? Let me tell you what happens. God removes His hand of protection over a nation, over a city, over a place. And then He releases the plague. And this spirit of destruction comes upon a city, comes upon a nation. But it doesn't just happen. There's a reason why. And it usually has to do with a country or a nation saying, no more! We don't want you. We don't want your word. Get out of this place. Get out of this city. Get lost! And God says, no, I'm protecting you. Get lost! And He lifts. Now this may sound like a ridiculous illustration that I'm about to give you. But it's not. Cities are made up of businesses and commerce. And since I was a kid, there was only one business that was a national chain that I thought ever completely and totally held to biblical principles. And that was a company called Chick-fil-A. Right? If you go to the mall on a Sunday, they're closed! Who does that hurt? Them! But they don't care because they believe in a Sabbath. Probably the only chain in America that just continually says, we're running this company by biblical principles. We're running this company by biblical principles. And so far people just let them go. There was only one city that got into a complete uproar about Chick-fil-A. Do you know what city that was? Boston. This is their mayor in the gay pride parade. Let me tell you, he got so upset that he wrote a letter to Chick-fil-A that I'm going to read in just a moment. And you're going to see such defiance in this letter that you're going to say, I understand. Let me play you just a little clip of what people have called the culture war that begins with Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A restaurants from coast to coast, confirming that the fast food chain is the new ground zero in the culture wars over gay marriage. ABC's Steve Osunsami is in Atlanta tonight.
Go! Go Chick-fil-A!
For the thousands of Chick-fil-A supporters who today crowded the company's restaurants, a chicken sandwich never tasted so good. Today they came to line up in support of traditional marriage, voting with their feet in Fort Worth, in Houston, in Miami, and at food courts across the country, where the lines wrapped around the malls.
This is my second one today, and I'll do another one tonight on the way home from work.
Chick-fil-A has long handed out millions to groups that fight against protections for gay Americans. But it was these words from company president Dan Caffey a few weeks ago that sparked the fire.
I think we're inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at Him and say, you know, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage.
In Atlanta, where
That's all he said. I think we're on dangerous grounds when we tell God what constitutes a marriage, instead of going by what His word says a marriage is. The mayor of Boston, and this is unprecedented. I don't ever remember in the history of government a mayor sending out a letter to a company basically saying, we don't want you here. And we will make sure you never are here in Boston. And here's what he said. It talks about in recent days, Chick-fil-A has opposed same-sex marriage. And they have said that the people who support it have an arrogant attitude. He says now, incredibly, your company says that you're backing away from same-sex marriage debate. I urge you to back out of your plans to locate in Boston. Then he goes on to say this. You call supporters of gay marriage prideful. Here in Boston, to borrow your own words, we are guilty as charged. We are indeed full of pride for our support of same-sex marriage and our work to expand the freedom of all people. We are proud that our state and our city has led the way for the country on equal marriage rights. Now, it would be one thing for our government to say, we want equal rights for all people. That's our government's prerogative. They should. We all should have equal rights no matter what. It's another thing for a mayor to come out and say, because this business holds to biblical principles, we don't want you around. That's crazy. It was funny because the comedians had such a ball with this. I mean, they made so much fun of this. One comedian said something about the fact that, you know, we'll still have gay rights, but all of these Christians will have type 2 diabetes from eating the chicken. Do you know right after this, you know who got type 2 diabetes? The mayor. He was in a wheelchair when he talked to the people of Boston because he's been plagued by sickness, one thing after another. I read the list of it, and it looks like the guy's like Job. He's just going boom, 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 and he doesn't get it. Guess what? The destroyer is on the loose. The king of the locusts has been released. He is always released to this. He is always released to the degree that we are destroying God's moral law. Let me just tell you this. This is not a battle against people. It's not a battle against, you know, homosexuality. It's not a battle against other people. It's a battle against demonic powers in the heavens. We are waging war right now in America against demonic armies that are seeking the destruction. And God has allowed these demonic armies loose on America, loose on Boston. And God will do it until we, the church, say, okay, God, back off. Forgive us. It was interesting. Another comedian said, Chick-fil-A needs to get its act together and realize that Boston doesn't want them. Meaning that the most liberal, accepting, diverse, the city that receives everybody, but they don't receive Christians. They will receive Muslims. You know what the penalty, you know what the Muslim penalty is for homosexuality? Death! Do you ever hear anybody talk about that? Islamic law is, if you're a homosexual, we stone you to death. In Boston, they call that having Islamic phobia. Everything's a phobia. You don't hear them speaking out against that. Why? Because this battle is not against flesh and blood. It is against principalities and powers in high places. How strong is it? Well, this demon that's been released from hell has an ally. It has a religious spirit. Let me just tell you what the religious spirit is like. The religious spirit is self-righteous. This religious spirit wants to stamp out immorality. That's why God uses this. When a country becomes immoral, he releases this spirit because this spirit hates immorality. It's self-righteous. It's the same spirit that the Pharisees had when they wanted to stone the woman caught in the act of adultery. Who does it want to kill? Infidels. Why? Because they don't believe in God. That's a wrong sin. That is the highest sense of evil. Infidels. We will kill the atheist. What does it want to do? It wants to stamp out sexual immorality. It wants to stamp out people who smoke and use alcohol. It wants to stamp out every form of vice. It is a self-righteous spirit that wants to destroy anything that it believes is destroying the law of God. Let me just say this. Christianity is full of grace. This is not. This was taken from the terrorists, these two young men, from their website.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful.
The Prophet said, when you see the black flags coming from the direction of Khorasan, go and join that army. That army has already started its march. They know it. And that's why they demonize the terrorists, anyone who supports that army. They know it. And that's why they demonize the terrorists, anyone who supports that army.
If you can take two affluent kids from Boston who drive Mercedes and go to Ivy League schools, if you can radicalize them, what do you think Muslims are being taught in places like Afghanistan? Let me just tell you, he's talking about Afghanistan when he talks about the army of the black flag. The prophecy is that they will raise up an army that will basically destroy all evil on the earth. And that means every infidel. And that means everyone who doesn't call Allah God. And in the book of Revelations, we're told that this beast is allowed to make war with the saints. And look at what it says. It speaks of the beast. He is allowed to make war with the saints, and he is allowed to conquer them. This is God's intention, believe it or not, is that he has this demonic power with a demonic army that hates Jews and hates Christians, and it is waiting for its day when they will be released upon the earth. And you say, well, what can we do right here, right now? There's only one thing we can do. When we see the plagues being released, when we see these beasts being released upon the earth, the only thing we can do is humble ourselves and pray. When we do, God says, I will hear from heaven, and I will forgive their sins and heal their land. Who does this come down to? It comes down to the church. But here's the rub. The way he protects us, the way he heals us, the way he delivers us is through his word. If his word is not being received, there is no healing for the nation. There is no deliverance from destruction. All that remains is judgment. I want to tell you something, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. They've won. They've won. The Bible is wrong. The Bible is an antiquated book that should not be followed by anyone. That is their message, and they've won. But now they're banging on the door of the church. And they won't be happy till every single one of you lay that book down and say, I renounce it. I renounce the truth that is in it. It is antiquated. It is wrong. It is bigoted. It is hateful. And I will renounce it. In 10 years, that line will be a reality. And right now, all we can do is wait. Judgment came once. This is a mild judgment. But another judgment is coming. It's not going to be so mild. The church is the last line of defense. Humble ourselves, pray, cry out, beg God for mercy. And God will answer based upon one thing. He knows the hearts. He wasn't received in certain places and they are going to face judgment. He might not be received again in America, and America will face the same judgment.
Thanks for listening to this message from River Mountain Church. Our church is located in Shepton, Pennsylvania. If you'd like some more information, visit our website, rivermountainchurch.org.